All right, so Jared, we teased it earlier in the episode, but this was the night that the lights almost went out in Darlington. Towards the end of stage two Sunday night, people.
I could not believe how bad that sounds back here. Where is it coming from?
It's the elevator.
It's the elevator shaft.
Okay. You're going to go ask them how long they're going
to
do this.
No, they're going to be doing this.
They're not going to wait on a podcast.
They're not.
A video game move wasn't needed to win Sunday night's Southern 500 Darlington Raceway, but as a viewer, we might have preferred it. Instead, Kyle Larson led the final 55 laps to finally tame the track that was too tough to tame for him for the first portion of his career. I'm Dan McFadden, host of Dropping the Hammer with Dan McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and we are here to talk about the opening race of the NASCAR Cup Series postseason. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Jared Haas. Jared, Kyle Larson finally broke through. He got that first win at Darlington, third win of the season, in a race that is a perfect one to advertise, don't judge a race by its first stage. because if we were doing that, Denny Hamlin would have won, and it would have been a very boring race.
Would have been basically a caution-free race.
Yes, exactly, because that first caution came on the last lap
of the stage,
coming to the stage in. But yeah, don't judge a race by its first stage, because it would have been not as good as this one turned out to be.
Well, Larson finally secured the win. It felt like the past couple of years, ever since that championship hangover, Kyle Larson's had a lot of those wins where he's dominated and went out front and then just couldn't close the deal, right? Mm-hmm. But the tables turned. It was Denny Hamlin that was the dominant car early on stage one, stage two, and issues arose, which we'll get into later in the podcast. And Kyle Larson was able to capitalize and lead 55 laps en route to victory to secure himself into the round 12.
So, like I said, in general, once the first caution on the race came out, coming to the stage in, when Bubba Wallace got into Joey Logano and they spun, it seemed like that pretty much opened the genie's bottle. It opened Pandora's box for the rest of the race, and very few playoff drivers got to the end of this race unscathed or without a mistake. It was basically, I believe, William Byron, Brad Keselowski, Chris Buescher, and Ross Chastain, four of like the 16 drivers, managed to not have anything bad happen to them. And we talked about last week how this first round of the playoffs, it's just like, survive.
Yeah.
As few screw-ups as possible. But when it comes to Darlington, this happens. Typically, first race of the playoffs, lots of playoff drivers have bad stuff happen to them, whether it's the heat of the moment, whether it's Darlington. It just all happens, and it again happened last night.
This is a tough track. Those tracks of, I would say, made for half the speed that they're going, and trying to manage the sand beaten down surface that is Darlington Raceway. It is a tough track mentally and physically as well. It's a good test, a litmus test to say who's a contender and who's a pretender. And Larson came above two, and you mentioned two of those drivers in there are teammates, RFK Racing teammates. And I think that's, they're hitting the cylinders at the right time of being consistently up there without an issue. Buescher and Keselowski both finished in the top 10, but you're absolutely right where if you have advancing to the round of 12 is just not committing mistakes and not falling under and losing that, you know, that little bit of cushion that you have.
Yeah, and luckily Larson bounced back for one of his mistakes. I believe it was early in the final stage or in the second stage where he smacked the wall pretty good after his car got stuck in neutral.
Yeah.
And he lost a few spots. But that paled in comparison to some of the other mistakes we saw Sunday night. Like, here's some of them. Denny Hamlin, who led the most laps by a lot, he had 177 laps. He had a pit for a loose wheel. And then he got involved in a wreck in the final stage that collected, among other playoff drivers, Kyle Busch, Michael McDowell, Todd Gilliland, and teammate Christopher Bell. So, one, two, three, four of the five drivers in that wreck were playoff drivers. You had Bubba Wallace and Logano had their contact in the spin. Logano also had a penalty for too many crew members over the wall. McDowell also had a speeding penalty. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. had a speeding penalty. Martin Truex Jr., who I picked to win the race, I believe had to pit for a loose wheel, and he wound up finishing...
He finished in 18th.
18th. So not a great day for Truex, who was one of the favorites to win this race after... And he's had a pretty, just solid run since the summer, and then you have this hiccup, first race of the playoffs. That's not how you want to get out of bed in the morning. but like I said, other than that, it was just like really four drivers, unless you want to count Chastain's... Not Chastain, Chris Buescher's car almost catching fire in the pits. And on the final restart, Keselowski like restarted like fourth or fifth, then dropped like a rock.
Yeah.
And almost got in a wreck. They didn't mention it on TV, but you saw it on the TV. Him like trying to like, I think, merge up into traffic, and it almost caused mayhem, but yeah. It didn't. And then Keselowski wound up finished.
Yeah, Joe Gibbs did not have a good day at all. Truex was the best finishing Joe Gibbs racing car in 18th position. You had Ty Gibbs in 21st. He was involved in that wreck. Mm-hmm. Christopher Bell, pole sitter, finished 23rd, had some issues with hitting the wall as well. And then, yeah, as we mentioned, Denny Hamlin finished 25th. A lot of people were looking for Joe Gibbs Racing to rise to the top. The cream rises to the mm-hmm. top. And they were nowhere to be found in the top 15 at all.
Wow. Yeah, Truex wound up having the highest place finishing of the JGR cars. Mm-hmm. But no, yeah, Kyle Larson bounced back. Like, this was his third win of the year. His first at Darlington after finishing there second three times in a row. One of those included his video game attempt move to beat Hamlin there at Darlington back in 2021, which proved unsuccessful, though thrilling. So we could have done with a little bit of thrilling Sunday night, but it was fun to watch Larson and Reddick, his fellow California native and driver with dirt racing background, them wall riding it out. I can't remember there being any other head-to-head matchups between Larson and Reddick in the Cup Series. Can you? Do you remember any?
Just like the ebb and flows of thing. No, I mean, Reddick's more recently kind of rising to the top on this occasion, and it seems like Reddick, too. I'm trying to remember. I feel like would have been one of those second place finishes that Tyler Reddick had before he got in the win streak, but definitely at first that Reddick and Larson both are on the same page and performing well.
And it would be at this track. It just would be. Well, just two wall riders, and where are we going next? Another track where there's wall riding, and a track where these two guys are really good at, Kansas Speedway, but we will get to that later in the show. But yeah, entering today, Sunday's race, Kyle Larson had led 715 laps mm-hmm. at Darlington. This is up there with like Bristol and Homestead for Larson, though. He won at Homestead and Bristol. He won Homestead last year.
He won Homestead last year. Bristol, I believe, was the year before in 2021.
So this was like
one of those tracks he's led well. He just hadn't able to seal the deal. And sometimes that just happens because, you know, the luck and the attrition of the race don't go your way, and Larson was able to do that as well, 715 laps. There's no question that Kyle Larson's talented. The question is, can he close out these deals and able to continue the success into the other rounds as well for him to secure his second NASCAR Cup Series championship?
All right, well, we got two audio clips from Larson. The first is Larson just talking about what it means to finally get a win at Darlington and get one of those crown jewel races. He has this one, Coke 600. All that's left is Daytona 500 yeah. and the Brickyard.
Yeah.
So, but here's what Larson had to say about finally getting that achievement.
I don't know. I mean, it feels really good, honestly, just to get a win and finally win at this track. Like you said, you know, we've led lots of laps here. So, I mean, to lead lots of laps here, you have to be good, you know, at a number of different races through the different years. But, yeah, this is just a track that I really enjoy, suits my style, and you know, just haven't won yet here. So it was good to do it today. You know, I knew we were gonna have a good car. We just didn't qualify as good as we had hoped, and honestly drove through the field way better than I thought that I would. And yeah, they did a really good job on the pit sequences to cyclists in front of people. And then from then on, you kind of just try to manage your race. And Denny was really good too. So he was going to be hard to beat without his mishap. But once whatever happened to them happened, you kind of opened the door for a few more guys to possibly win. And we kept ourselves in the game enough to get it done. I got in the wall some point in the third stage, and then you kind of had to nurse it to the next pit stop, and then things just worked out. Your team executed when we needed to.
All right, Jared, like we said, this is a wall rider's track, and Larson's the who's the head of wall rider? Is it Larson or is it Reddick?
I thought you were going to say it was going to set up to Ross Chastain. I mean, he's the ultimate wall rider. What are you talking about? Yeah. If you're talking about the ultimate dirt racer, I mean, that's Kyle Larson in the fact where, you know, he has the experience. You have to ride that cushion almost between the wall. and, you know, you're going to smack it a few times going down there 367 laps.
And here's our next, speaking of that, here's our next clip from Larson talking about what it was like riding the wall throughout the night. He estimates he hit the wall like 20 times throughout the night. So here's what Larson had to say about riding the wall and the advice he gets from when he watches TV. Oh, you don't have to, you know, ride that close to the wall. But here's Larson's response to that about what it takes to win at a track like Larson. And it takes what it takes to win at a track like Darlington. And it takes riding the wall. Here's what Larson had to say.
Yeah, no, I mean, the good thing with this car is that you can graze it some. Obviously, when you slap the wall, that's when things bend. I probably grazed the wall at least 20 times a night or more, all in three and four. I got it a little bit into one once. But really there was only two times where I thought that, ooh, you know, maybe it did some damage there. The first time was there late in the, or middle of the third stage. I just didn't get a clean enough downshift, and it kind of hung into neutral between fourth and fifth and stayed there for quite a while. And then it finally dropped into fifth as I was like close to the center of the corner and went to fourth. And then I was just lower off of the wall. And when you're lower, I watch broadcasts all the time, and people are like, just give it some room, just get off, you don't have to run right next. Well, you have a lot less grip when you don't run right next to the wall. So I was a little bit off the wall because I had made the mistake on entry. And then by the time I got to fourth, it was already sliding. And then I, slapped the wall, and then that's when I lost a bunch of time. So I'm sure it's bent a little bit, but thankfully, not broke, and we were able to finish and still get a win.
Okay, Jared. So this was Larson's third win of the season. His previous wins were at Richmond and Martinsville, so short tracks. Before that, his previous win was at Homestead last year. So it's weird. He's having a weird season. He leads the series in top five finishes. He has 11, but he only has three wins. Those came early in the season. It's been an up and down year. As his crew chief Cliff Daniels said, if you look at the season, it's like a perfect heartbeat. That's what it's like. Either he's winning or he's just down here. He's had 9 results of 26 or the worst this year, and he has 6 DNFs. Those aren't. That's not at first blush. That's not championship winning consistency.
You know what you tell me with that type of news and what's going on with this championship candidate? You know what you take up? This is the resume. I can just rip it up and be like, that doesn't matter. All that matters is the wins that he got in, and he's advancing to the round of 12.
I mean, he could just win one race per round, and he'd be safe.
I mean, he's had a lot of, like, crashes. He's had a lot, like I said, his DNFs were with crashes.
Yeah.
Quite a few of them were at Super Speedways, was involved in Charlotte as well, and Bristol Dirt. But at the end of the day, the mark of a championship is this championship format. It's not the consistency. Oh, he has 9 results, 26 or worse, but, he has 11 type fives throughout this too. So it's getting hot at the right time, winning at the right moments, and Kyle Larson picked the right moment to win at Darlington and is going to be in the round of 12 at least.
Yep.
So he's making another step closer to championship.
Yeah, but here's what Cliff Daniels had to say about what you take away from a season when you're good but also hot when you're good but also cold just as often. Like you said, he's called it like a perfect heartbeat. So here's what crew chief Cliff Daniels had to say about their season so far.
It's hilarious if you plot the finishing, just the five car finish from all the races this year, it's a perfect heartbeat. So we had zero momentum all throughout the year. You know, at any point we would win, finish 30th, you know, run second, finish 30th, wreck from the lead, finish 30th. And it was just like that all year long. So I guess what I'm getting at is from a team building perspective, we had to really focus in on ourselves and learning the lessons in the moment that we needed to learn from some adversity that we created, or just overcoming some of the challenges that were thrown our way, and really set ourselves up to just have that, you know, have that resilience within the team and kind of have that steady mind within the team, so that if we ever had the good fortune to have a, you know, top five day going again, and we could close it out, we're ready to do that. So we've been knocked around a bit this season, but we're battle tested and we're going to keep marching forward. Yeah, I mean, I think we had to look at it very realistically. And so here's what I mean by that. Even when we had the DNFs or the 30th place finishes, typically that came from running in the top five. So it gets very discouraging by the time you're on your second or your third, you know, wave or cycle of the up and the down. And so we've had to very much call it like it is. I certainly, you know, made a few mistakes calling races this year. He's made mistakes behind the wheel. Our pit crew's made mistakes on pit road, on and on and on. We've had to find the right ownership in that of how to hold each other accountable and still build and learn from that and, you know, kind of group ourselves, you know, together tighter through that. And again, now going into the playoffs, there's still so many different things that can happen, especially with the next gen car, so many different variables, the way these races played out or play out than what was a few years ago. So, our mission is to take all the lessons that we learned from the good and the bad. And every week we've just got to put our best foot forward.
All right. So let's do a rundown of the top 10, yes. Jared, for the Southern 500.
Yes. As we mentioned, Kyle Larson finished first. Tyler Reddick was second. Chris Buescher was third. William Byron finished in fourth. Ross Chastain, back here in the playoffs, is in fifth. Brad Keselowski in sixth. Bubba Wallace finished seventh. Chase Elliott was eighth. Ryan Blaney was ninth. And last year's winner, Eric Jones, rounds out the top 10.
All right, so going deeper on those stats. So, like we talked about RFK Racing already, they're doing so well in this last month and a half. It's really remarkable. So Chris Buescher has four top three finishes in the last six races. He hasn't finished worse than 11th mm-hmm. in that stretch. Then that was at the Indy GP. Brad Keselowski, he has six top tens in the last nine races. And but going into Kansas this week, he doesn't have any finishes better than 14th in the last four races there. And then you have William Byron, one of those four guys who didn't really have any problems except he started in back. He's finished fourth or better in the last three races after no top tens in the previous five races. Hey, and we found Ross Chastain. We can take his face off the milk cartons now. He earned his first top five and only his second top 10 since he won at Nashville in June. And like you said, just rip up the resumes. Do you think this is a sign of what's to come for Chastain and company, or are you concerned maybe this might just be a blip for them?
It looks more like a blip as the fact he almost went a lap down. Mm-hmm. Remember that at the end, I believe it's stage one. And, you know, this night's you're more racing the racetrack than trying to survive. Ross Chastain did run well at Kansas in the spring. I believe he was in the top 10.
Yes, he was.
During the spring. So there's potential with that. But I mean, I felt like the inconsistency bug would hit him more. I had him as one of my first four out.
So did I.
But again, you know, playoffs can prove you wrong as well. That sometimes it just takes one or two races to right the ship that was going so wrong for weeks.
So yeah, looking up just making sure. Oh, come on, computer. Click.
Yeah, yeah, Ross Chastain in the spring at Kansas.
He was fifth.
Yes.
So yeah. Hopefully we can see something more out of him in these next two races. But then you had Bubba Wallace. He finished sixth. Seventh.
Spun early at the end, conclusion of stage one. Was struggling early and was able to rebound and get a seventh place finish.
It's his first top 10 since Loudon. So, again, like Chastain, better late than never. But like he's going to Kansas where he won this race last fall. So, and I believe he also finished, yeah, he finished fourth there in the spring. So that's a good track for him. All right. And then you had Chase Elliott, who's no longer in the, he's not in the playoffs at all, except the owner's playoffs. He finished,
eighth,
and he's finished eighth or better in three of the last four races. And then you have Erik Jones, who, you know, he won the Southern 500 last year. Legacy Motor Club across the board has pretty much been down all year, but he gets that top 10 finish, and it's his third top 10 in the last seven races.
And we'll give a little shout out to Carson Hocevar, finished, yeah, 17th in his Legacy Motor Club debut. He made his Cup Series debut earlier this year at Gateway, was running pretty well until a brake failure happened. He was able to complete the race, completing all the laps with a 17th place finish, and he will be in the car for the next 2 weeks.
But no, yeah, you're only your second Cup start, and you're finishing that well at the track two touch team. That's impressive. Mm-hmm. And that car's not been good,
yeah,
at all this year.
And I think it was the best finish for the 42 car on an intermediate track this season. It's, you know, it's those little things that I think Carson realizes is finishing those races. And I think he made mention too that he has his ride set up, but you know, it's not necessarily yet on the Cup Series level. So, Carson Hocevar, there's going to be some big plans surrounding him on where he's going. There's a lot of speculation of going back, you know, trucks, Xfinity, or even Cup Series.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this kid was born in 2003. I believe just only 18, he's 20 years old. So he's got a lot of potential. We'll see where he lands next year, but this is a good race to add to his resume.
His performance at Darlington isn't a complete surprise because he made his second Xfinity start there early in the year, driving the 77 for a Spire Motorsports branded car, and he finished sixth.
Yeah.
So, not a complete surprise.
Spire's a little bit more involved than they have the hauler and stuff. So Spire works on that quite a bit, but obviously Junior Motorsports helped with that. So Carson Hocevar looking up and up on his resume, but yeah, I mean, a lot of survival was the key factor of this race.
So one more top 10 note. This is a pop quiz time for you, Jared. So Ryan Blaney, he got a top 10 finish, finished ninth.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So he has four top 10s in the last nine races. How many of those top 10 finishes have been in ninth?
I'm going to have a feeling that it's going to be all four of these.
Yep.
See? He's like Ty Gibbs earlier this season. I think Ty Gibbs had a streak of like ninth place finishes as well. So, I mean, it's...
But in nine races, four times he's finished ninth. That's as high as he's gotten. So, and of his 13 top 10s all year, five have been ninth.
Yeah.
So, ninth place Blaney. Okay, Jared. So, we teased it earlier in the episode, but Sunday night in Darlington was the night that the lights went out in Darlington, at least in turns three and four, towards the end of stage two. People on social media and on team scanners began noting, hey, the lights down on the inside of turns three and four, they're not on. They're not coming on. And it slowly got darker and darker in turns three and four until they had to throw a caution. And how's that listed on here? Light power outage in turn four from lap 180 to lap 191 plus a red flag. So
we're thankful for technology when it happens.
Yeah.
And when it doesn't work, it's not helpful. And, you know, people don't realize how important those inside lights are. You can be like, oh, we got outside lights to light up the track. Well, no, you need the inside light to see where the wall's at. And it was pretty dark against the wall. I mean, you could hide people. Like, you could, like, play hide and go seek. And, you know, that, especially considering that it's Darlington of all places where you need to know where the wall is. It needed to stop and get those lights adjusted because that was a safety issue. You just don't want someone just diving in there, pancake the wall, and cause a caution. So much needed. Glad they got it fixed. This is not the first time I've encountered it.
When I was out living out in Charlotte working for NBC Sports, it happened, I believe, at a Coke 600 where the lights. The overhead lights on the front stretch, some had gone off through like the trioval.
Yeah.
I don't remember how the situation resolved at all, But I do know that that happened once.
I remember a couple incidents, mainly when I went to Gateway in 2010 as a fan and covered the race in 2011.
Yeah.
Excuse me, 2021 for the Truck Series. Both had power issues where the lights were affected. And I remember the Budweiser shootout practice in 2011 when they were tandem drafting the back straightaway, and then all of a sudden the lights went out, and it was just the 24-hour Daytona lights. Yeah, you tell me how to do tandem drafting in the dark at that. So we need lights to see at a track if we're going to race at night. So
yeah. So like one of those bizarre things that you really don't want that to happen opening night of the playoffs.
Yeah.
But it did. But nothing bad happened, fortunately, thankfully.
But we did not leave Darlington without a little bit of controversy.
And what controversy was that?
We're talking about pit lane being closed or open.
I wouldn't call that okay. So you know, we should have brought this up when we were talking about the top 10. But so this is the first like what if of the playoffs.
Yeah,
because Kevin Harvick, he was about to take the lead from Reddick like two laps before. He was down on the inside. He was there. So Rodney Childers decides to bring Harvick down to pit road a lap early, like trying to get ahead of Reddick. And Reddick, like, Harvick's pulled down, and Reddick, like, is told either he sees, I don't think he sees Harvick doing
it. He slows down in the middle of the corner.
But at least he's told about it. And he tries to slow down in order to maybe possibly make it to pit road. And when he does, Ryan Newman has to check up and spins. And then the caution comes out, but Harvick's too close to the commitment line to avoid it. So he just has to go. And because they didn't know if they had made it across the commitment line in time, they just committed to pitting. And so Harvick got a penalty for pitting while pit road was closed. So that ruined his chance at a win, which would have been a huge win. His final year hasn't won yet.
Just the bad luck Harvick type of thing.
He's now, because of all that, he's now 2 points below the cut line. But this feels like the first big what if of the playoffs right here.
And I've been reminded of a very similar situation that happened in 2006 at Watkins Glen. This happened, the exact same thing to Kurt Busch when there was a car that spun on the track, and he was right there on the commitment line, and pit road closed right before he could go, and he couldn't dodge out.
Okay.
It's the victim of circumstances, right? You know, you can't. Pit road's already closed. It was open, then it closes. I wish there was a little bit more of a lenience of that rule, of where that if you go on it, you're committed, and then it closes, like what happened in the Harvick situation. If you just drive by, you're fine. But you know, with I think with both situations, they both pitted, and obviously that's pitting under caution. So it's just a tough break. Caution just came out at the absolute worst time for Harvick. That split second when Ryan Newman was spinning, and you know, Larson and I believe both William Byron were going to be pitting too, and they jutted out.
Yeah.
But Harvick was way too committed.
Mm-hmm.
If he would have done that, he would have been past the commitment line, missing pit row, a commitment line violation. It was just a bad box that Harvick was put in.
But I've never seen anything quite like that, where car number two pits and the leader tries to pit two, but causes a wreck behind him and screws over car number two. I've never seen that before.
It's basically the Mario Party analogy, Mario Kart, of just putting a banana peel right on second place.
Mario Party analogy. All right, there's the episode title. Anyway, but you know, unfortunate for Kevin Harvick. Doesn't get that win, but we're going to Kansas, going to Bristol. He had a good race at Bristol a couple of years ago, but we'll see how his round of one plays out. But anyway, that should do it for the Southern 500, unless you have any thoughts, Jared.
Man, I mean, like I said, I've made mention of my thoughts. Poor Harvick, poor Hamlin with that phantom loose wheel, and Kyle Larson finally capitalized on everyone else's mistakes.
Poor everyone but the top four. So, but anyway, yeah, that'll do it for the Southern 500. Now we'll move on to our brief news section for the week. Okay, Jared, so after basically two weeks of pearl clutching, hand wringing for what could possibly be in Denny Hamlin's future in the NASCAR Cup Series, we found out on Monday that Denny Hamlin's going to stay with Joe Gibbs Racing. He signed a multi-year extension to stay with the team that he's been with since the mid-2000s. So we don't get a repeat of the long, hot summer of where's Kyle Busch going to wind up. Denny Hamlin's going to stay at home driving the number 11 car for Toyota. 2311 will also stay with Toyota. So there was also that will they, won't they of, could 2311 become a Ford team? Which I just never saw happening after only just 3 years of existence with Toyota. That just didn't seem like a good, just logical, practical move for a young team like that that's still working, building its way up into the NASCAR world. But Hamlin, who's 42, once Kevin Harvick retires and once Martin Truex Jr. retires, he'll be the head dog. I imagine, aside from maybe like ending his career with like one season with 2311, I think that's probably still on the table at some point. Aside from that, he's going to be a Joe Gibbs Racing guy for the rest of his career.
It's like a split image of the Kyle Busch thing, because I think it was around this time is when the news broke that Kyle Busch, it was a week after Kansas weekend, which we're coming up here, is when they made the announcement that Kyle Busch was going to Richard Childress Racing. And and I think this helps some Hamlin focus on right now and the immediate future of winning that championship, working with Joe Gibbs Racing. This is not going to be a last hoorah type of thing. And mainly the details of holding up were Toyota's support of 2311 Racing, because even though Denny Hamlin's the driver, Denny Hamlin is the owner. And he has that good relationship with, want to make sure that relationship with Toyota still continues on. And I mean, Ford did look tempting because, you know, they're starting to get an uptick. RFK Racing's starting to perform. They're looking for another team besides Stewart Haas Racing, which has been really struggling. But all that can be put to rest. Denny Hamlin is back behind the wheel for the Joe Gibbs Racing team.
So with that little piece of silly season put to bed, that still leaves the tank. We're not 100% sure that Alec Almirola is going to be back next year, but all the hubbub around it is that he won't. So we don't know who will be driving the 10 next year. We don't know who will be driving the 31 car for Colleague Racing, which is currently driven by Justin Haley, who will join Rick Ware Racing next year. And the 42 car at Legacy Motor Club. We don't know who will be driving that car.
And add some question marks to the 16 car. AJ Allmendinger will be with Colleague next season, but it's still to be determined if Allmendinger will still be in the Cup Series or will he be jumping back down to Colleague's Xfinity Series program.
Man, if I'm in that situation, I don't think you're putting the team in the best situation if it's just a one season thing for Dinger, and then going back to Xfinity. I would think you'd want at least a couple of years of consistency before maybe going to the young guy. That's just my gut feeling.
I think the big thing is AJ Allmendinger is a big, you know, confidence and results type of person. Yeah. He'll get down when he's down.
Yeah.
And you know, that rejuvenated him from 2020 to 2022 when he was running the Xfinity series.
Yeah.
So they're exploring the possibility whether it'd be helpful for AJ Allmendinger to be back down there, get a few more years of confidence, then go back up to the Cup Series or commit full time to the Cup Series. Because again, they missed the playoffs. There's been quite a few people in the early season predictions had him go get into the playoffs and be kind of a spoiler. Yeah. But it's been disappointing for the 16 team. Like I said, a lot of other questions. 42 is a relatively, we thought there was going to be one thing, and then obviously the incident happened. And still looking, I think it was John Hunter Nemechek was the forefront favorite for 2024. The 31 car is well known, but there's still who is going to be driving it. Everyone a colleague knows, but nobody else does. Mm-hmm. And then the 10 car.
And Chris Rice said it would surprise people.
Yeah.
So that's had me thinking, like, well, who'd be surprised? Like, yeah. I mean, there's Chandler Smith, who's in the Xfinity
series.
There's
Matt DiBenedetto, who announced he was not going to be returning with Brackley Ware. As soon as Austin Hill announced that he was re-signing with Richard Childress Racing.
I think there was like a two-week gap. There was a gap.
This followed this. They were trying to get Austin Hill. That didn't happen. He's going back to Richard Childress Racing.
Mm-hmm.
So Matty D, a few other options. If Ty Dillon shuffles around in another team, that could be another fall place. But yeah, there's still a lot of question marks, and usually we have most of the question marks answered by this time.
So I look forward to seeing where all the chips fall on that. So, all right, but yeah, that'll do it for our news update. So now it's time to preview round two of the NASCAR Cup Series playoffs. All right, the Hollywood Casino 400 at Kansas Speedway. Here's our preview of race number two. So if the 2023 NASCAR Cup season has a Mount Rushmore of best races of the season so far, the spring race at Kansas would definitely go on it, in my book, because that's a race that came down to a battle between Denny Hamlin and Kyle Larson, and on the last lap, contact between those two drivers resulted in Hamlin getting the win, which was just... I'm still not used to Kansas Speedway having good races. It's just weird. We're on year three of this now, and it's just so weird after basically 18 years of racing there. Now it's like a marquee race. It's just bizarre. And that was, again, it was one of the best races of the year. Hamlin came away with the win. Larson came in second.
It's like the anti-Texas Motor Speedway.
Yep,
that's. I think it curtailed this track, curtailed to the next gen car.
You're right. You're absolutely right. But again, this is a track that falls in Larson's wheelhouse. He's come close there. He lost the spring race last year to Kurt Busch. So I'm guessing this is one that he's really itching to finally breakthrough
you
on.
Got and the main mention too, I'll give a little sneak peek, you got 1-2 at Darlington, Kyle Larson and Tyler Reddick. I wouldn't be surprised if that 1-2's up front again here at this weekend at Kansas.
Yeah, but in the spring, Hamlin won. That's after Larson led 85 laps. Hamlin led 34. Martin Truex Jr. led 79. So the driver who led the most laps did not win that race, didn't win Sunday's race. So I wanted to compare the top 10s from the spring at Kansas to Sunday's race. So you had Kyle Larson, William Byron, Bubba Wallace, Tyler Reddick, Chase Elliott, and Ross Chastain all finished in the top 10 Sunday, and also last in the spring at Kansas and last fall at Kansas. Of those drivers, it was Wallace, Byron, Chastain, and Larson. So I'm going to... Would not be surprised if all those guys are up,
yeah, it
up
gives
there,
you a except, pick. It looks like your picks are kind of more coming into focus here. So who's your pick to win this race?
I'm going to go with Larson.
He's going to be the on favorite. I still like Toyota. Toyota did well in the spring. They've won here the past two races. I'll go a little bit more on a limb that he's playing a little bit hot. Finished second. I'm going to go with Tyler Reddick. I think that's 2311 is going to go back-to-back for the 45 car at Kansas. They won with Bubba Wallace when he was in the owner's playoff hunt in the number 45 car. So I'm going with Tyler Reddick, and you're going to go with Kyle Larson. We'll see how those two drivers perform.
All right, so this weekend's race at Kansas Speedway, that's 2 p.m. Central on the USA Network. That's 400 miles, 207 laps.
267.
Okay, 267 laps, my bad, at the 1.5-mile Kansas Speedway. But again, so far this year, it's been Kansas Spring, Coke 600.
The Intermediates.
The Intermediates. Who would have guessed?
Who loves the cookie-cutter tracks? All of a sudden, cookies have become tasteful again.
But it's those two. Oh, man. Daytona
500.
Oh, Michigan was really, really good.
Pocono. It's chaotic. You had Hamlin use the slide and glide to get around Larson.
But for me, it's Kansas, Coke 600. The one I just mentioned. Oh, Michigan, and
all that to say, tune in Sunday. Do not want to miss TV.
Kansas has become must-watch racing. So, yes. Definitely tune in. 2 p.m. Central, USA Network. That will do it for us this week at Dropping the Hammer. I'm Daniel McFadden. You can reach me on Twitter at Daniel McFadden, or you can email me at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. And where can they find you, Jared?
They can find me on X, formerly known as Twitter, at RealJaredHaas.
All right, well, we'll be back next week where hopefully they won't be working on the elevator anymore. we had to edit out all the noises, but it got loud, very annoying. So hopefully that'll be good news for us. But anyway, we'll be back here to recap Kansas and then preview the round one finale at the Bristol Night Race. So anyway, I'm Daniel McFadden. Thank you for listening and watching Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden. We will see you next week.